Good morning, community. I hope, many things, I hope. I hope you slept well. I hope practice was alive for you in your own way this morning. And hope it still is now. Always with this idea that we can always begin again. That's the great thing. Even if we've got lost for several hours in the torments of our mind, our habits of mind, it's always possible to wake up again. And also any situation, inner or outer, any experience of the body can be the matter we study or learn to care for or be with. You know, there's no situation that are not welcomed or included in practice. And I'd like this morning to talk a little bit about practice before we do it together. And I wanted to come back on the idea that meditation, meditative presence, practice is maybe all about the relationship we have with what is happening. And to me, there's something very radical, like a radical shift of view here, when I would tend to think that what is happening is what's important. Over the years, it seems like my teachers have very patiently pointed again and again, very gently, to Pascal. What is important might not be as much what is happening than the way you hold it, the relationship you have with it. So in meditation, it becomes very, very central. It might take a few years for us to maybe understand this, a few more years to be reminded or remember ourselves about this. I think we're talking decades here, really. And to me, it appeared more clearly. I think in one longer retreat that I did with Sayadaw Upandita, Burmese master, and in that retreat, we had to report every day. So I think I was sitting for 2 months, that retreat in Massachusetts. And every morning I had to go and report on what was happening. And because every day I had to go and report about something, about a part of the walking meditation or the sitting or the mindfulness, as I was, I think I was doing a work retreat. So it meant I was maybe 4 hours in the kitchen. Early in the morning, washing the floors and, you know, pouring honey, big honey jar and small honey jars, different things like this. This was very much seen as practice time, you know. And I think I noticed a pattern, maybe in the last few days. You know? And the pattern I noticed at some point, I was like, oh, the teacher doesn't seem to care so much about what I experience. That's strange. He doesn't seem to, he cares a lot though about how I hold it. So, you know, I can report light, you know, full of light in my head and something like this, or dejection. I'm tired to work in the kitchen, you know, like they have me do the hardest chores, you know. Early in the morning, it breaks my back, you know. And the teacher was always, you know, and how are you with this? how is the mind meeting this? Actually, there was always three questions. There was always the question, what was happening? So the what, the thing. This was the first question, what was happening? How was it held, mindfully or mindlessly? No judgments. Really, the teacher wanted to know, you know, mindfully or mindlessly, or, you know, with reactivity or with care. Or if there was reactivity, was the reactivity, was I aware of the reactivity or lost in it or thinking I shouldn't have it, or in this middle path here that I talked about? Oh, there was a lot of reactivity. There was an awareness of it. There was curiosity about rage. You know, were you caught in rage? Were you wanting to not feel rage, or were you really interested in rage? You know, so always the how are you relating to it? So that's the second question. And the third question always was, and what happened eventually? Well, you know, all the floor were washed and I couldn't go back to the cushion, or the light faded, you know, and I was still old me on my cushion wanting awakening, you know. Or, you know, anything. So this, do you see this third question, what it's pointing to? Anicca, dynamism, ephemerality, change, transformation. So the teacher wanted me to notice how something would transform. Oh, the cold ended up passing. The desire to be back home, that was enough. Now, you know, I was there for 2 months, maybe day 12, you know, okay, enough now. I've done it. I don't know why, like, it looks really good in conversation. I'm going for 2 months, but 12 days is enough, you know? And what eventually happened? Were you mindful of it? No, I was caught in it for several hours, you know, really wanting to be back home. And then, yes, I caught it. Then the relationship changed. I became aware that there was strong desire, and it led to compassion, because it's not easy to be somewhere and want to be somewhere else. You know? And what eventually happened? Well, eventually I thought it was really a good idea to be here. You know, I really need it. That was my conclusion at that time, you know. So three questions. What was happening? How were you relating to it? And what happened eventually? And actually at the end of the retreat, I was talking with other meditators. I hadn't talked to anybody, you know, before the retreat. I think I arrived, you know, the retreat was just starting, got my room. And at the end of the retreat, I was talking with the other retreatants. Oh my God, whoa, whoo, we did it. Not easy, you know? And people were saying, we were in a small group, maybe four or five after the retreat talking. And people were saying, I'm so happy I had the document about how to report, you know? And they were, oh, me too, I'm so happy. I kept referring to the document on how to report to Sayadaw Pandita. And I was like, what document? I didn't get the document. And so there was a document of a few pages telling you how to do a classic report when you meet the teacher, which I didn't get, you know. So I learned the hard way about the three questions. I didn't know there was three questions to answer, but the teacher was really patient and saying, hold on, I want to know what was known. Hold on, how was it known? Hold on, I know there's a lot of things you want to tell me. I just want to know three things. What was happening? How was it met? And what happened eventually? And so going through all these things, pleasant things, unpleasant things, the teacher always kind of unmoved, you know, like always sitting in this chair, very calm, very incisive. Is that the way you say it? Very like, you know. And very clear, what was happening? Describe to me a moment of your practice. What was happening? Were you sitting? Were you walking? You know, were you doing chores? Were you in your room? Tell me a moment of your practice. How were you with it? Were you with it with aversion, with desire for something else, with curiosity, with care, with benevolence, with harshness, with self-judgment? And what eventually happened? Eventually, the thing changed, changed, and eventually the relationship also changed. You know, I was really interested in the breath, really interested in the rising, the falling, very, very interested, and suddenly bored. Okay, enough of the breath. I want something really stimulating now, like chocolate, you know. Ah, did you see it? Were you able to notice it? Yeah, I saw how it arose in me suddenly, like uninvited, suddenly. I want to be somebody else, to be this person in front of me in the hall. I want to meditate like them, you know. Were you aware of this? Yeah, how did it feel? Contraction in the chest, etc. So the relationship. So when we practice meditation, be it in a formal way, you know, walking or sitting, or be it practicing meditation as we are going about our things in life, you know, the way we relate to things is a little different. It's at another level when we, and I'm going to talk here about like kind of, can I say this, pure vipassana, like more, like really precise work that, yeah, we'll do today, we'll be doing today, or at least that's the invitation, and you see what works for you, what makes sense for you. I'll put it like this. This is one way to practice that is known and, you know, described. There's a lot of instruction about it. And so the way is that we relate differently to what's happening. Usually I relate to things in my life with the lens of I want, I don't want, I prefer, I would like this, with the lens of expectation. This is not what I expect. I hope this is going to happen. I think this is going to, what's going to happen. Maybe ways like this. I don't know how to say it with better words this morning. But when we practice, we remove these habitual ways we see things, relate to things, and we put the Dharma lens on. And when we put the Dharma lens on, what is happening in our life is not anymore happening in my life, about me, what I wanted or not wanted. Suddenly with these lenses, things become phenomena. They're phenomena appearing and disappearing. It's what we call in Pali, Dhamma Vichaya, investigation of phenomena. So there's a little, it's not our habitual way of relating to things. I'll do this first, then I'll do that. In my timeline today, this is here, and it's there in the timeline. When we practice meditation and we put on the Dharma lens, the timeline falls. Now there's just stepping. Now there's just breathing. Things become experiences to be known. This morning I tried to take a few notes to kind of prepare my thinking around this, and I wrote, we're not involved in things as involved in the same way as usual. What we're actually doing is we're questioning the reality of what's happening. We're questioning the nature, it's better, the nature of what's happening. So in my regular life, probably in yours too, when there's a thought, I follow the thought, you know, it's the thought describes reality, even if it's about the future, you know, later I'll do this today, it appears to me as reality, you know, I will do this later today, it's factual, you know, I don't know, it's fictive, I'm not aware that it's fictive, it's a fictitious, do you see what I mean? Even you might hearing me and like, no, if I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. That's factual. And so when we're practicing meditation, it's very different the way we relate to thoughts. We relate to it as a phenomena. That's a big switch. It's not so much the content of my thought in a way, as much as the fact that there's a phenomena happening. There's images being produced in the mind or words being said. Isn't it really different? It's very, very different. I'm amazed that it even exists. to me, it was striking in a way. When I was younger, at some point I did, you know, I was doing a therapy. I was seeing the therapist a couple of times a week, I think for a year. Like it was, I don't know if you call it, but analytical bent to it. I don't know how you say it in English, but, and we were really interested by the content of the thoughts and really interested by the content, the symbols, the many things about the thoughts. And then I went to a meditation class, and that's what they call the move from cush to cushion. Is that the way you call it? You're laying on the cush with the therapist, you know, and then you're like, okay, you're gonna move from the cush, from the couch. Oh my God. From couch to cush. That's the expression. From couch to cush. From couch to cushion. And in that movement, both are good. Really, really good ways. But it's good to define which ways we're practicing today, you know? So today we're moving from couch. I remember back then, you know, associations of mind and symbols and imagery and emotions and all this. And we move from that to on the cushion, suddenly we're interested in phenomena. There is a thought, there's no more thoughts. There's an image arising, there's no image arising. In a way, it's almost that simple, or I'll present it like this for now. And so it's a very different way. I was amazed when I was sitting, I was like, wow, that's so different. Instead of getting in the matter of the thought, I'm just aware that it arises and passes, or anything else for that matter. And so we are invited to become aware of phenomena, to find out their nature, what they're made of. And as you know, we've talked about this, you know, it's very present in the Buddhist teaching. What we'll find out is the third question, you know, that things arise and do pass. That is why we want to stabilize our attention so that we can relate to things as phenomena. That's already a challenge, and relate to it long enough to see it change. Yeah. So we're interested by the phenomena itself, what was happening. We're interested by the relationship to it. It's a relationship of not so much involvement as in life. It's a relationship of sati, of mindfulness, of being with. And we're interested in the nature of the phenomena. It will change. Yeah. One way that you might have heard Kamala Master put it, or me describing this, because last year I taught a retreat with Tuere Sala, amazing, Joseph Goldstein, amazing, and Kamala Masters, amazing. And Kamala described mindfulness, and part of what she said was just enough energy, honey. That's how I hear it. Just enough energy, my love. Just enough energy to connect and sustain attention on an object, a phenomena, to know it clearly. Just enough energy in the sense of not clinging to it like we cling to things we want or fear. So not getting so involved. Huh? So just enough energy to know an object, to connect with it and sustain attention on it, and to know it clearly or directly, we could say. I think this is not easy. It's very delicate work. The work is not so much to produce a lot of effort. I think the work is to not put so much effort in our, you know, so much involvement. Like allow things to be known, just enough energy to allow something to be known and to, with some duration, sustain, remain. Is it possible to stay there? Just enough attention on the breath to see it arise and pass. On the sound, to see it arise. On the thought, just enough energy not to dive into it. Yes, let me follow it wherever it leads. I'm a follower. I'm a believer. Give me any thought. I believe it. I follow it. No, not so much in engagement in this way, or not so much, just enough to know that it appears and to watch it maybe disappear, pass. Wow, very delicate, not easy, but doable and insightful. We're going to discover a lot of things. So in there, I'm talking about the relationship, right? Are you seeing this? It's a really different way to relate to events, experiences, phenomena, or objects in Kamala Master's definition. Just enough energy to be, to know an object, to connect and sustain attention on an object, on a phenomena, on an experience, an event, a thing happening. Just enough to know it clearly, to be able to know, oh, hearing is happening. Not so much involvement like, oh, why is there so many people on the street today? You know, just enough energy to notice, oh, a sound has arisen. And if there is involvement, just enough energy to know there is involvement. Oh, the mind is running with this one. So not so much energy that we start embellishing. Do you see what I mean by that? There's a sound, and then we create a whole production of mind around it, you know. Or there's a sensation in the knee, and then, you know, it all led to down to COVID, you know, started with the knee pain. I'm like, oh my God, is this one of the symptoms, you know? And then I'm at the hospital. I'm even back from the hospital before the bell rings, you know, I'm still sitting here. I went there, they told me this, they prescribed that to me. I called everybody, and then the bell rings. Oh, that was a lot of embellishment. You know, it was all mind created. How, was it noticed? No, or maybe yes. Oh yeah, I saw how the mind was creating a whole story. Papancha, it's called in Pali, proliferation of mind. So very, very simple. I hope the words I'm using here are not bringing more confusion, but we'll find our way back anyway. I trust that. When I say not too much involvement, I don't want to mean, it could mean, it could sound like I mean removed. That's another kind of paradox. We're not so involved in things, but we're really close. We're inside of them, actually. If you think of mindfulness being like water, you know, when it comes and it meets something, it just goes fully around. It knows it, in a way we could say, huh? It just like touches it completely. If it's porous, it gets inside, you know? But for us, it's not like we're getting in with calm, with curiosity. So we know all the contours maybe of something. Another image that is used is mindfulness is not like a cork staying at the surface of things. It's like a rock that falls into things. And so in this way, the attention we bring, the curiosity we bring, the presence we bring, takes the form of the breath, if it's what it's knowing. We could almost say, you know, our attention becomes the breath. The attention doesn't have a form. So it allows it to take the full, to meet fully the breath. Or fear. Oh, fear feels like this. You know, attention comes really, really close to fear, the sensations of it, maybe if it's present in the chest, or the kind of tonality in the mind, or joy. Oh, attention doesn't have a form, so it can actually come in or around, or, you know, really discover the experience of joy as it is there, alive if it is, or calm, or doubt, somebody reported, yeah? Shall we try it a little bit? Play with it? There's a lot of trial and error. There's a lot of space for exploration here. We don't have to do well. You know, we don't have to, certainly not perfectly. That's completely deluded, not a possibility. We're trying it out. We're discovering what it can mean for us here now. So see what spoke to you. Maybe nothing, maybe something. Maybe you know your own practice, you know where you're at, what's interesting for you. Or maybe the water image was, you know, resonant. Allow it to become your experience. Or maybe the three questions are interesting to your mind. What is happening? How is it known? And what happens eventually? Or what happened? Don't try to remember everything. You couldn't remember nothing or one thing. Not so much about me and what's happening and I want to be happening, but more what's here, what's here? Can this be known? Is it possible to consent to experiencing this, consenting, allowing this to be known? This breath, or this silence, or this ache in the heart, or this attention, discovering what it feels like to be attentive. Not demanding, not rejecting. Experiencing lucidly, caringly. Just enough energy to connect with an experience and be with it. Just enough energy to connect and be with an experience and to know it simply, clearly. Clinging to it like we do when we want something or don't want something. Just experiencing it with calm curiosity. If you noticed or notice that the mind is clinging to something for it to improve or change or to keep it or Sometimes the mind clings to thoughts, you know, wants to go further with it, is fascinated, enamored. We can become aware of this. We don't have to judge it. Just become aware, are we? The mind here is clinging to thoughts. Be delighting in it, wanting more of it. Can't only notice its appearing and disappearing nature. It's hooked. It happens often. No judgments, just aware of it. Notice what happens when there is awareness. Sometimes the mind releases the grip, the grasping, at least for a few seconds. What is known right now? What is being experienced? How is it known? Is it known with presence, lucidly? Or is it known in delusion, mindlessly, not aware of what is actually happening, not conscious in this way, just drifting along? And the possibility of waking up here now to what is happening now, body sitting, breathing, maybe an emotion present or not. The mind a little scattered or gathered. No judgments, we just want to know what is happening here now. If you want, now, for the last couple of minutes here of this meditation, if you want, and if your eyes are closed, you could maybe open them and see if it's possible to keep the practice alive with sight being present. We often think of it as a hindrance, but could it be just a phenomena happening, sight? You know, this sensitivity to colors and forms, light, maybe meaning also. As you move your eyes around, you'll see that the mind can't help but recognize the different objects of your life. Can it be okay? Can it be there with mindfulness? Can there be an awareness of seeing? And an awareness of maybe touch of the physical body, breathing, or tingling. An awareness of sound, hearing. these be known as phenomena, bodily sensations, or sight, seeing, hearing. Maybe we could focus on the inner state, the state of this meditator right now. Sometimes there's quietness, sometimes frustration, big wave of impatience, or kindness. Notice something will happen. Notice the relationship to it. Can it be known with care? And you'll notice something eventually will happen with that event. It's really good to notice when an event happens, an object, an event, a phenomena happens, and we notice that it's possible to know it simply, clearly, to let it come and to let it go. And it happens a lot in our life, but it might go unnoticed, you know, because we tend to notice when we cling to things and when, you know, we get upset with things and when the mind contracts around. But there's actually many things that can happen and they can be known mindfully like this. I don't know how it was for you, but to allow something to arise and to pass, it could also go unnoticed, you know, but then we would lose the potential for it to lead to calm or to joy or to, you know, so using the events of the day, a step, a bell, an arm going in a jacket, the feet in a boot or shoe or Birkenstock, to actually bring presence. There's many, many doorways to well-being that we miss being habitual and busy and giving value to what's next. You know, when I'll be outside, when the, you know, there's many, many things we can actually use to ground ourselves, to maybe gain access to contentment. Very surprising that hearing a bell could become enough, just that full of just simply that. Suddenly, the idea that I should be somewhere else, somebody else, that I should be further along, that I should be seen like this, and all this drops, all that, these beliefs and fictions drop, and there's just stepping. Ah, freedom. One hypothesis that we could work with in the walking, if you want, I'm just saying, let's, if you want, again, only if you want, start with the idea that there's always attention given. There's always attention given to something, but often it's not very high quality attention. You know, it's not what we call mindfulness, a full, generous, conscious attention. There's always attention. And here we have the chance to see how attention behaves, you know, what it tends to go to. For some of us, you know, it tends to go to the past, ideas related to the past or ideas related to the future. And here we're training attention to be in the realm of the present, you know, and to be a little bit more full. But we find out as we practice what attention tends to do, drift away in dreamland, or, you know, worst case scenarios, or you know how it, you know. And at the time of the Buddha, there was one person I really loved when I read that story. I thought it was so right. I couldn't believe it was not happening today. You know, it was happening 2,600 years ago. And the person is saying to the Buddha something like, I heard you give your instructions and how to relate to things with this mindfulness stuff. And he says, for us. And he's talking for everybody. He's like, for us, you know, what you're suggesting is a sheer drop. That's the translation in English. Like, we love to embellish. We delight in letting our attention construct worlds, you know, like if they say that to me, I'll say this to them. And I, you know, and then I'll say this to other people about this person, you know, and we love that. We delight in this. And you're inviting us, like your friend Kabbalah Master says, you know, to just have enough attention to notice an object and stay with it to see it arise and pass. This is a sheer drop for us. You know, it's not fun. It's not what we delight in. And, you know, then the Buddha seems to say, yeah, but depends. Candy or gold? You know, do you want the beauty and the depth and the beneficialness of wisdom? You know, then you have to know, you know, where attention goes, what quality it has, you know, where it gets stuck all the time, turning in circle, you know, and being fascinated by its own productions. And so let's see if we think that there's always attention, and we're going to discover in the next 25 minutes or so where it tends to go and what kind of quality it has. See you soon.